This episode is brought to you by the Old Dominion Athletic Foundation. Because of you, we create winners in the classroom, in athletic competition, and in life. Become a member today.
Monarch Nation, we are back with one of our own. Our guest this week is Coach Lenny, an Old Dominion alum. Welcome to the show.
Man, Mike, how you doing, man? Justice, how are you, man? It's good. I'm glad to be here, and thank y'all for having me on your platform, man. You guys are doing a wonderful job.
Well, when we started talking with you, I looked into your background, and it's super impressive of what you've been able to accomplish in your football career. Starting out as a student assistant volunteer at ODU football, now you're the running backs coach for Presbyterian College, a great FCS program.
Yeah, no, I mean, like you said, I started out student assistant, working my way, really kind of, you know, had a real interesting kind of path in football. I've always loved the game, always cared about it. It's been something that's been a part of me since I was small. My mom could tell you, I've been drawing plays since I was like 7 years old. I used to get the Madden little coach. You know, I remember when Madden had the little coach headset and everything like that. Like, I had that. So I was that guy. And so for me, it's been a great and beautiful game when it comes to strategy and just teaching and developing young men. And so, you know, I pursued it as a career, and you know, I think it's flourishing and doing pretty well in it. So I'm thankful to God for that.
All right, so let's go back to the beginning. You talked about playing Madden and just writing plays as a little kid. But what was that first moment for you where you're like, this is my game? Like, this is the sport I love.
I mean, at the time, I was born in Philadelphia. So, you know, I was as a kid growing up, I used to watch the Eagles games. We only had four or five channels. So, but they would come on either. I think it was Fox, right? So, yeah, Fox sometimes. And if they're playing the AFC team, it was on CBS. So for me, you know, I remember my mom and dad brought home a little Eagles football and threw it to me. And I was like, man, like, I'm gonna run with it. My dad was a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan. You know, my mom, she rooted for, you know, our local team. So I guess she was Philly. That's where we were living at the time. And for me, like, I was big into soccer growing up. You know, I was pretty good at that. And then, you know, one of the coaches, youth coaches, kind of saw me and was like, hey, man, you can run. You know what I'm saying? You physical. Cause I was kind of knocking kids over a little bit. And they were like, hey, you should try this out. And so I got my first opportunity to start playing football in the youth league when I was probably, what, sixth grade. And so, you know, for some, you know, hey, some people started high school. I started sixth grade. I started early and got an opportunity. Definitely had a wake-up call because remember the first couple of days that passed, got smacked around a little bit because I really didn't know what I was doing. But, you know, liked the physical contact and, you know, really kind of just fell in love with the game from there.
You know, you look at your high school career. You know, I watched an interview with you earlier, and you were talking about that injury. Can you tell us about that high school career, I guess, and like that moment when you had that injury, and kind of like the impact that had on you as a, and how it, you know, I guess helped you grow as a person, and you're able to use it as a coach later on in life.
Yeah, so you know, I was playing ball all throughout high school. You know, I worked hard in the weight room and loved it. You know, obviously, I played wrestled too, actually. A lot of people didn't really know that, but I actually hurt it, my shoulder, actually, my freshman year wrestling, right? And then, you know, like a kid, like everybody, you think you're fine. You know, sub-locked out. And then I was like, man, like, you know, I'll be okay. So, you know, I just continued to go through the season, continued to keep playing on it throughout the year. And I actually got all the way up to my senior year. I was working out, you know, in really good shape, running throughout workouts, going through the year, going through camp. And I found out I had chronic dislocation and sublocks that tore off there, off the bone during practice. And then, you know, I was kind of bummed out because, you know, that's an 8-month injury going away from, you know, football season and taking away from it. So you like, man, like I really missed my entire senior year because, you know, I tore my shoulder. And so, you know, I kind of derailed it a little bit. I had always planned on either, you know, trying to get a ship in football or walking on or for whatever college I was planning on attending, you know, and the beauty, and like I tell my players all the time, is I didn't lose. The fact of the matter is when football got taken away, I still had my brain. I still was able to be sharp in school. And that's a credit to, you know, really my mom and my dad, really, you know, telling me, hey, man, like, at some point in time, that ball, the air in the ball is going to go flat, just like I tell my guys now. And for me, it was like it went away early. It bothered me for a long time. It actually threw my coaching career. You know, it kind of sucked because I was like, man, like, I'm watching you guys do things that I used to do and do at high level. But, you know, that was my time. It was short. And so coming off the injury, I trained throughout school going into college. And then I went to the doctor and talked to him. And he was like, well, you know, you had a surgery, you repaired, but there's a chance it could slide out again, you know. And I got what, pins going all throughout my shoulder because your shoulder's made up of your labrum. So I tore all of that. It used to slide in and out when I slept. And it was painful, man. It used to be nice where I woke up and my shoulder would be slunk down like this. I'll wait for it to get snapped back. It'd be in the weight room. Sometimes it was sublocks out. I'll get back on the bench, continue to keep benching, like continue to keep working out. And you know, just being young, dumb, and really just kind of ignorant to your body, like not understanding, hey, like, man, your body's telling you you're hurting. You know, it's probably not good for you that what you're doing right now. You need to stop and heal it. But when you know you put that Superman cape on and you feel like, hey, I'm invincible at that age and, you know, I'm going to be able to figure it out. You know, you kind of go through it and go through the air. But, you know, I tell my players all the time, God got a way of humbling you. And that was my humbling moment. So and that's kind of what led me on my path as beginning to be a coach, if that per se. So.
So Old Dominion, after your high school career, it's ended. Football's kind of done for you.
Yeah.
You come to Old Dominion. How did you approach the staff on becoming an assistant or a volunteer?
To be honest, I emailed, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he was a DFO on Coach Wilder's staff. And I remember, so I had a job on campus, and I remember it was actually, I think it was a chicken place. So I can't remember the name. But I was working, and, you know, I saw the coaches coming into the building. I said, hey, I emailed you guys about potentially being a student assistant. Now, you know, my first 2 years, I was like everybody else, you know, when you go through an injury, kind of bummed out, but, you know, still trying to find yourself as a young college student going through there. But I tell my players this all the time, I got the beauty of seeing both athletically and also seeing, hey, how life was as a quote unquote normal college kid. Right. Because even if you talk to some athletes, they'll say, hey, I missed out on certain things because, you know, of my athletic responsibilities. And that's understandable. Right. But I got to see opportunity and chance to see both. And so I emailed them. They asked guys, they told me, hey, you can come on as a volunteer throughout camp and holding the film and kind of just, you know, making sure we got filmers and stuff, which is what we even look for now as a staff that job is vital and it's so important. Back then, I didn't realize how important it was, but as a coach now, you're like, hey, it's vital to have a filmer. And so you kind of see like, man, this role in this play. But what it did was it allowed me to sit there in the building and see, you know, what they were doing offensively and defensively and kind of get a gauge of it. And then, you know, throughout there, I also, while I was helping them with that, I also shot the highlight film. So I got to work on the media side to see, hey, how you shot the highlight films for different sports. And I'll never forget this gentleman's name. His name is Paul Briggs. He used to be over video for Old Dominion, right? And, you know, I was there and I was in his office and he called me, he hired me. And he said, hey, man, you working with football, you doing both. And he was like, you always trying to get over there on that side of the building too, as much as possible, right? But, you know, that kind of helped me get into the door and be able to, and I'll never forget this. I actually went on the trip when they played, I think it was 2016, I might have been 17, or I can't remember, but they played NC State, right? And I was actually on that trip when I went down with them and got an opportunity to see how you do it on the road. Cause I was doing it at home, but it's different when you travel and you go through that. So I got an opportunity to see there. And, you know, it gave me a different perspective. Up in the box, kind of seeing there, and that's really what kind of opened the floodgates and the door for me and allowed me to take off and help me to get to where I'm at today.
What is the, you know, if you look back at your time at Old Dominion, what were the lessons that you learned back then that you were able to, you know, use as you grew through the coaching ranks?
I mean, I think what it really taught me was, you know, perseverance. Like, you got to go after the things that you really want, because obviously your school is prestigious and in its own right, and you know, it's challenging academically, but also too athletically, it's great in itself. But it gave me a perspective that, you know, anything that you want to achieve, anything that you want to go after, you have to be the one to own it and go after it. And so, you know, there were plenty of times, and I was sitting in cafe, I think it was 1201 now, I don't know if it's still called that, but you know, I would tell people all the time, like, man, I'm gonna be a coach in college, and I'm gonna sit there and I'm gonna be a college coach, and I'm gonna get it before I'm 30 years old, and God bless me with the opportunity to now be a four Division I's position coach before 30, which is, you know, not everybody can sit there and say that done that, but I had that vision back then. So it taught me, you know, that to persevere and go after everything you want, but also to, man, it gave me lessons on hard work and that things don't come overnight, right? And the steps that you take in college, you know, they build are truly building you for the future that you want today, and I'm living those steps. So
your time at Old Dominion, any fun or interesting stories that you can share?
There's a bunch. I don't know if I can really share so many, but no, man, there's a bunch. I mean, obviously the NC State trip was awesome. You know, my time there, you know, being able to see just the different guys work each and every day. You know, athletes and stuff like that. There's a lot of basketball games attended to, but yeah, it's there were some fun. There were some fun times.
And there were some really good players on that 2016 team that went to the Bahamas Bowl. Notably Zach Pascal. Getting a chance to watch those guys win 10 games and perform at a high level, did it give you a perspective of what you need to look for in athletes when you're out there recruiting?
Yeah, I think, you know, you can learn a lot through observation. So you can kind of see, you know, what each and every skill set, because I tell people all the time, like, you know, I got a chance to watch Zach Pascal, got a chance to watch, even before that, Larry Pinker, I got a chance to watch, you know, Jonathan Duhart, guys who were good each and every day, Ray Lowry, running back, like, they were loaded. And then, you know, I was just a guy up there just minding my business. They didn't know who I was, like, people didn't know, but, you know, a man with a plan, had a dream that just got an opportunity to see. But a lot of the skill sets and those bigger receivers that they took, you know, guys who were able to go up and get the ball out, snatch it out of the air and, you know, run after catch and all that stuff. You know, I watched that and I watched how they recruited and guys who they were bringing in. And I kind of got to say, hey, okay, hey, you know, jot down on my little notepad. Hey, man, like, this is what you got to study. This is what you look for in this player. This is what helps you here, right? And then, you know, seeing guys every day, how they worked in and out drills and stuff like that. You know, I was just taking notes, mental notes and physical notes, actually, and just saying, hey, I'm going to make sure that I implement this throughout. And when I come time to lead and coach, as well as some of the stuff that I've learned, you know, throughout, you know, my football time playing and stuff like that. So.
So after Old Dominion, you end up coaching high school, right?
I got an opportunity and a chance to go coach at Rock Ridge High School, which was probably one of the best experiences that I ever had, because I tell coaches all the time, like, you got to learn how to coach a high school kid before you can go coach college, before you can go coach pro. Like, because at that level, you got to do everything. You got to teach from the ground up, and you got to develop a teaching progression, whether it's on the field or off the field, developing the man as a person, which is, you know, obviously that's the most important thing in my eyes, right? You can't coach the player without coaching the man. So that's why I kind of got my grounded and basis of fundamental teachings from there. And, you know, credit to George Madsen. He's now the head coach at George C. Marshall, which is in Falls Church, Virginia. He saw just a young guy who wanted an opportunity, was hungry and, you know, had a dream and a vision, and, you know, was going after him, what he wanted. And so, you know, he basically was like, hey, man, like, I'm going to give you the entire freshman team, and then I'm going to give you an opportunity, right, you know, to coach on varsity. And so you know, for me, looking back on that, that was huge because, you know, I probably, I'm a way better coach than I am now, but back then, right? I'm a way better coach now than I am back then. But like, you know, just to be able to say, hey, I trust you with this entire development, because when you look at high school, like that foundational piece of freshmen and instilling them, the good ones, the good high schools, you know, they are aligned from varsity all the way down. Right. And so it's just like any other program, right? Like the alignment's got to be there. And so for him to be able to do that, that, I mean, it meant a lot to me, and it meant a lot to what, you know, my development as a coach.
After high school, you go to, you know, Tyler and Independence Junior Colleges. When you go to that setting, like what was maybe the biggest eye opener for you, or maybe something you didn't expect, or that people just don't understand or don't know?
I think the biggest thing with junior college football, I went to Independence first and under Kiyoshi Harris, and then I had an opportunity to go to Tyler under Thomas Rocco, who's the head coach. And so I think the biggest thing for me, man, guys, like it's so many a different array of kids that come from different backgrounds, different socioeconomic situations, different religious beliefs, different political views, different races, all, it's a collection, it's a football team, obviously, but everybody's there with one common goal, and that's to get it out the mud, right, in junior college. And I tell people that, you know, regardless of whatever path that kid took, you know, he ended up there for a reason. And as a coach, your job is to help him, you know, to get to the next level. And that's what that really kind of opened my eyes to teach, you know, how you approach a kid who comes from, you know, a different background than you, right? Or a kid that, you know, might be going through some trouble and got in trouble on and off the field. And, you know, you got to find a way to connect with that guy in 6 months, because potentially there's a bigger school coming in there and saying, hey, in December, we expect them to graduate because we've been looking at him, and you got to find a way to connect with him, right? And so to be able to say, hey, I got to coach you as the man first, and then I got to coach you as the player so that you can be able to perform at your highest. Right. And so that's what that taught me. Right. It taught me how to deal with people, but it also taught me work ethic. You know, I had that obviously from high school and the Old Dominion in my college days, but really understand the ins and outs of a football program, just the daily grind that sometimes, you know, when you go to, you know, bigger division ones, you kind of overlook and take for granted of those small jobs, not small jobs, but like in your eye, in some guys' eye, smaller jobs, like, you know, hey, I got to go set my own field up. Yeah, man, like we don't have GAs. You got to do that as a position coach. You know, you got to sit there and say, hey, I got to go organize my recruiting and make sure I got all these calls taken care of that night, right? On top of that, I got to make sure that, hey, I got 6-7 guys that are ready to go, because at the end of the day, right, my roster could turn over. The kid might not come back. A college could come in and scoop that kid up during the spring where you think, you know, where he's a qualifier, and you might have to go replace that. So it taught me that work ethic and that drive, but also to, you know, the volume recruiting and being a relentless recruiter and going after, you know, top level prospects and getting them to be connected so that they play for you. That's what JUCO taught me.
All right, so after JUCO, you've hit a number of FCS programs, but I want to first hit on quality control assistant at Richmond.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's a position that a lot of people don't really understand. A lot of fans don't really understand what they're really doing.
Right.
But I think it kind of helps illuminate that you've done every job you can possibly do on a college football team other than coordinator and head coach. And I think personally, having worked in corporate settings of people that have risen up from the bottom to more executive positions, they usually treat their people better and they connect with everybody. I imagine that's the same for you.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because, you know, I try to make it apparent to talk to the GAs wherever I'm at, equipment guys who quality control, guys who have been, you know, the grunt work guys that people don't see on an everyday basis. I mean, obviously, you know, I've been blessed to coach in some NFL stadiums, been on television, been a lot of places, but there's a lot of people behind the scenes that make a football team go, that a lot of people don't see. And I've had the opportunity to do those jobs, like you said. And the reason why is because in order for me, because my aspiration is to be a head coach one day, but and at a high level or get to the highest levels of football. But I think you got to understand the entire process and the entire organization before you can lead, right? And so, you know, I truly thank God that he was able to take me through those steps and those journey, because I see things in a different perspective. You know, my appreciation for the equipment guy going through there. It's funny, we were just going through equipment here at Presbyterian as coaches and setting up and getting organized. And I was thinking back to when I had to do it at Missouri Southern, which is Division II, which is who my head coach, who I work for now, he was the offensive coordinator. I was his running back coach. So, you know, those lessons and those things you think about, you never take them for granted when you get an opportunity not to have to do them anymore. But when you see people in the building and you see people saying, hey, I'm going to sacrifice my time, go pick this trash up, or I'm going to go say, hey, coach, I'm going to make sure you got all your, you know, clothes. I'm going to make sure all your players are fitted out. I'm going to make sure all the training stuff is done. You got a greater appreciation when you've done it before, and you can say thank you. And that thank you is coming from a place of generosity and gratitude for them, truly.
After Richmond, you go to Norfolk State, and you return back to Norfolk. What was that moment like? I guess, like, you leave Norfolk, you're a young guy, you're trying to find your footing as a coach, and now you're back in Norfolk as a coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was obviously it was a blessing, and you know, it was great. You know, Dawson Odoms, who's now the head coach of Bowie State, gave me an opportunity. Guys, I was planning to stay at Richmond. You know, one of my mentors and someone who I'm very close to, it went in October. I was working directly under him. He's the OC at William & Mary now. And obviously had a really great relationship with the head coach, Russ Huseman, now, and everybody on that staff. But I was planning to stay because I was learning a lot from a receiver standpoint, from the passing game and all, just entirely offensively. But, you know, God has a way of giving you that opportunity, what you prayed for and what you wanted. And that was a full-time job, Division I. And so for me, you know, it was an opportunity I couldn't turn down. You know, I was excited. You know, I had family in the Hampton Roads area. So, you know, getting the opportunity to go back and see them. And then, you know, obviously was in the green and gold at Norfolk State, you know, right across from Old Dominion. But it was ironically, you know, it was great because the first 2 years, and it's funny you talk about funny stories at Old Dominion. I actually went back to Old Dominion for the first time on homecoming because we actually, our bye week fell during the 24th season when I was there when Old Dominion was playing at home and it was homecoming. So, you know, walking on the campus and just people just grabbing me and saying, hey, man, like, I remember you. I remember this. And it's cool to see, you know, you know, you're going to ascend to this and things like that. That was really eye opening for me and a blessing for me because, you know, I never really was really one to say, hey, I want the attention of people and everything like that. I didn't know people was really watching like that. But, you know, to be able to say, hey, people come up and say, hey, I remember when you said you were going to coach college, and it's great to see that you're doing that and going back, you know, that feeling to be at home and on your campus, that's something I will never, ever forget. And I'm always cherished because, man, it's nothing like going home, you know, to the place that really molded who you are those four years that I was there at Old Dominion University and helped me become the man who I am today. So, yeah, it was definitely great to be back in Norfolk.
All right. Well, I'm going to skip ahead to Presbyterian because obviously Bryant is a huge part of your story, but Presbyterian's been where you've been at. Talk to us about landing that job and what makes Presbyterian a great place to be a coach.
Man, I think number one, anytime you get a chance to coach football in the South, you know it's a blessing, right? And you know, obviously Virginia's the South, but you know, we just take football a little differently, you know, and I think it's a football town. You know, we're the smallest Division I college in the country. You know, we have roughly about 1,000 students, right? So, and like I tell people all the time, you know, you really get a chance and opportunity to develop personal relationships that you can have for a lifetime here in Clinton, right? And we're the stop that's right between Clemson and South Carolina. I tell people that all the time. You know, if you don't know where we're at. But, you know, and for me, taking that job, it was honestly about my head coach, you know. And, you know, he hired me from a Division II in Oklahoma, didn't know, you know, who I was, you know, gave me an opportunity and chance to come in and be a running back coach on his offensive staff because of a recommendation from people that he had heard who I'd worked with from before. And so for me, you know, that relationship was important because when somebody gives a chance on you and they call you again, you know, that means they hold you in high regard. And so it was his first head coaching job opportunity. And it was important for me, you know, to repay that favor and say, hey, man, I'm going to help you get started. And we're going to take off and go to, you know, super, even higher heights because, you know, obviously they were successful last year and he was the offensive line coach. But, you know, for us, you know, that's really what drew me there, you know, guys. And so I love it here. I love the staff. We got a mixture of young guys and older guys with experience. But the one thing I say is we got some dogs on this coaching staff that really know how to work and we push our players and love them up. And that's when you can be a part of that, you know, each and every day, knowing that the guy next to you and the people that, excuse me, the players that are in your room are playing hard for you each and every day. You know, it makes your job as a coach so much easier because you come in with joy and you come in with a smile and, you know, you're really ready to just pour into them and help them take on the world, you know, on and off the field. And that's what it's about. So
just one quick question about your time at Bryant, looking at the first victory there, the win over FBS UMass. What was that like and what did that mean for you?
Man, it was a great feeling. I mean, I'm one that's like, if you ever watch me on the field, I don't get too high, too low. You know, I kind of stay even keel, you know, because for me, it's important as a coach to always be that stable force for my players, man. So, but you know, winning against an FBS program, the first ever victory in program history, regardless, you know, of how it happened, how we got it done, is something that you can never take away forever. And looking back, just the joy in the locker room, seeing the guys just jumping up and down, you know, hugging coaches, really just shout out to Coach Merritt. You know, he's an awesome head coach and a great guy to work for and just a great man in general. But I was happy for him and I was happy for the players because we really worked hard that we believed, you know, we said, hey, you know, we got an opportunity to beat these guys. You know, they're going to take us lightly. And, you know, to go up there in Massachusetts and go on their home turf and to get that win, you know, made some mistakes early. But again, it speaks to, you know, kind of just and each and every program I've been at, you know, we've had kids that, you know, truly persevered and truly wanted to go through some things and believe that they were going to come out on top and had some fun victories. And that one is definitely up there, you know, for that.
All right, so you talk about Coach Rawl bringing you back in to Presbyterian after you guys worked together at Missouri Southern.
Yeah.
Relationships, I've learned from years of talking with Coach Ronnie and his staff. Yeah. You notice it when they make new hires. We talked with Charles Walls recently. Relationships are huge in the NFL. It doesn't matter who you talk to in football. Relationships are obviously a massive part of building these staffs out.
Right.
So how do you as a coach kind of instill that in your players to understand that how you are as a man will help you out in the future?
I think sometimes people overlook that because they want to get to the final destination so quickly. Right. And what I mean by that is just like at the end of the day, when you look at the majority of coaching staffs, you know, we spend so much time with each other that we become family. And, you know, some people use that term, you know, loosely all the time, but it really is truly, truly a family. We spend so much time, you know, with each other, game planning, recruiting, all that. And there's going to be times where it's contentious, you know, because we're all competitors. We want to win. But the relationship aspect of really, truly getting to know someone as a person, showing that you care, you know, being able to just say, hey, man, like a lot of times as men, sometimes we don't even tell each other like, hey, man, I really care about you. You know, you my guy. Like I tell my players, I love them because I think that's important. Right. And building that that confidence up, because some of us don't hear it, you know, and I've just seen that when you tell somebody that, hey, man, and you genuinely mean it, and I mean genuinely mean it, and go to no ends for them, you know, rather it's a coach or rather it's a player, you know, good things truly end up turning up and happening to you. And I, you know, that's something that's important, you know, for me. It's important for, you know, our staff here. And it's part of the reason why I'm here, because somebody believed in me, you know, and that relationship brought me to Clinton, South Carolina. But I try to get that across to my guys each and every day, because I tell them all the time, you know, it's funny because I was just talking to one of my players about this. I said, look at the 2016 Cavs team. They all got together. You know, I don't know if you guys saw it in the media. They won a championship. They all got together in golf. Well, I mean, everything you see now, you know, is great. But I'm sure that they went through some things, and they had to learn each other, and they had to understand each other for them to end up getting to that moment and being able to say, hey, I tasted that champagne. I seen the confetti come down, you know, to get to that moment. It taught them, right, that they had to understand each other on and off the court, right? And so as a football coach, you know, we talk about that daily. You know, it's important, and I think it pays dividends regardless if you're a player or a coach. So,
I mean, you've held a number of jobs and doing different aspects of football. You've seen football at almost every level. What would be one piece of advice you would give a high school football player, you know, aspiring collegiate athlete?
I think it's important to market yourself. You know, you got to go out there and compete. I think we're losing. I don't want to say we're losing, but some of us are losing the will to want to see guys compete. You know, I mean, I'm an old school coach. I want to see you out there. I want to see you getting in the front of the lines at camps and go taking those reps. I want to see you being able to win, you know, one-on-ones and challenging. I don't mind a little jawing competition back and forth. That lets me know that you got some dog. That lets me know that, hey, you know, you care about this game. You're passionate about it. And you understand, you know, that you know, football is tough, it's hard, you know, it's a game where it teaches you about life, that it's not, everything is not just going to be given to you on a silver platter and say, hey, you know what I'm saying, we're just here to serve you, it's easy, right? No, you got to go take what you want, right? And so I challenge high school players to say, hey, how can I go be the best version of myself each and every day? And I think you got to be a multi-sport athlete. Again, we look for that here in Presbyterian. And also, too, you know, you can't turn down, you know, opportunities to get better, right? I hear sometimes high school kids like, oh, man, like, I'm camped out. I'm not going to this camp. I'm not doing these things. Like, you never know who's going to end up being there. You know, I tell guys all the time, you know, logos change. People don't, right? You know, there's a ton of logos that have changed. But the person who's in that logo, you know, doesn't. So, you know, for us as coaches, we look for certain characteristics. And that doesn't matter whether we're FCS, G5, or P4, right? Like, we gravitate to certain people and certain players with certain attributes and an attitude. So that would be my advice. So I don't know if that.
Well, that's great. Me and Justice have been at a lot of ODU camps this summer. And one thing I kind of hit hard on, and what I kept seeing jump out at me, were the kids that were coachable versus the kids that weren't.
Right.
And as they got tired, that group of uncoachable kids got bigger.
Yeah.
So how hard is that to, without a camp, how hard is that to find out as a when you're?
Well, I think the number one thing for me that I look for a kid who's uncoachable, at least at the running back spot. Do you show up on other people's film? All right. And I've said that in multiple interviews, but, you know, and podcasts have talked on, but it's important. You know, it to me, that looks where that you're going to play. You're going to take on what the coach is saying and say, hey, I'm going to play outside myself. Like, I'm going to sacrifice. I'm going to make sure I'm going to do the little things. That tells me that, hey, when you come in the classroom, you are probably a person with good grades, hopefully. And then also, too, you care enough about and are selfless about your brothers and your teammates that you're willing to go help you, help them go make plays, right? And so that's kind of, I kind of look for that on the film. I don't know if that kind of answers your question when it comes to looking for coachable attributes, because I think that stands out. But also too, I also look for how you treat your parents, right? That's the number one thing in my eyes that I think a lot of us as coaches have got to pay attention to, is if the kid ain't gonna listen to his parents, he ain't gonna listen to you, you know? So like, I don't know if you guys have kids, I don't have kids, but like for me, you know, I grew up, hey, what my parents said is what my parents said. What the teacher said is what the teacher said, you know? And so, you know, and that has taken me a long way, because it translates over in the workforce. You know, what your boss says, regardless if you agree with it or not, is what your boss says. So again, those are kind of two things. Are you willing to make plays on other people's film? And also too, how you treat your parents. You know, that kind of lets me know if you're going to be coachable or not. Because if you don't listen to them, you ain't going to listen to me. So you ain't going to be in my room. So that's kind of how I see it.
When you're recruiting kids and watching film, what are like the most important skills that you look for, you know, in a player?
As far as what position?
For running back.
Okay. Acceleration and deceleration. You can be fast all you want, but if you can't stop and start, you know, it's not much I really can do for you, because you got to make cuts. You got to be able to stay within your frame, get in and out your breaks. I tell guys all the time. And then also too, like I said, showing up on other people's film, that means you got a pass pro. You know, I look for three down backs, complete backs, I call them, guys who are, you know, dependable in the pass game, the run game, and pass protection, who are willing to put their face on somebody. And so I look for those are kind of, you know, my non-negotiables, right? I believe you can teach, you know, vision and blocking scheme to backs to be able to get them better, to be able to get them to understand and anticipate and see things faster. Because a lot of times, you know, you guys, I'm sure, drive, obviously, and like myself, again, you become a better driver as you go when you know where you're going, right? It's the same thing when a running back. When you know where you're going, when you know things and anticipate things are going to happen, right? I talk about it all the time. You're a defensive driver, you're a defensive runner, right? You're able to make sure, you know, things happen that are good for you, when you understand, you know, the whole crux of the offense, and especially the block scheme. So those are kind of the things I look for in a player.
I was glad to hear you talk about pass protection, because I think maybe not the NFL level, but at the college level, you see players that, you know, can bust a 70-yard run, can juke a guy out of his shoes. And then you see the fans wonder why that guy is not getting as many touches as you would expect, right? Yeah. And it's because they can't pass protect, right? That's I feel like it's a very underrated but yet super important part of the position.
Yeah, it's funny you guys mentioned that, because I'm in my group chat with my running backs all the time, and I said, man, I sent him a message, and it was actually the Packers were playing, I believe, the Bears, and Jamal Williams, who was the running back when Aaron Rodgers was there, you know, they were trying to push the ball down the field, and he ends up picking up a linebacker just screaming through the A-gap, right? And I told him, I said, man, like, those are the little things that people might not necessarily talk about, but that made that play, that he's able to get that ball off, and they were accelerating down the field quickly and put themselves in scoring position, right? And like you said, it is a lost art. You know, you got to coach it, but it's 50% coaching, 50% will. And so you got to find a player, you know, who loves contact and is willing to be able to do that, and then teach him the right technique, because – in my opinion, that'll make them unstoppable. So,
I mean, when you talk about blocking, I kind of think of someone we already mentioned on the show, Zach Pascal. He ended up having a longer career in the NFL because of his willingness to go out there and block as a receiver. Yeah. That sort of development for the receiver position, it seems like it might not be an easy thing to sell kids on.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not sure if you'd agree or
no. I actually do agree that it. You know, because you get guys who are coming from high school, been the man. I tell them all the time, you know, college is a unique place, right? Everybody at some point in time was the man, right? And so I think it's important for you as a coach to have real conversations and not just sit there and spoon feed kids what they want to hear, right? I tell guys, we spend time, you know, we pull up you know, NFL stats in there. And I pull up examples of guys who, you know, have made it on special teams and have went down and smacked the guy on a kickoff like Terrell Davis did, you know, with the Broncos back in the day, and kind of give him a little history lesson on, you know, it's not all about what you do running the football or receiving and catching. Sometimes, you know, you've got to be able to say, hey, am I willing to put my body on the line and make a sacrifice? Because, you know, at the college level, even at the pro level, like, everybody was the man at some point, all right? But what are you willing to do, the little things to separate yourself out to make sure that you can ensure that the team is going to be great, and then your individual accolades will follow? And so, you know, and it's tough. You know, you got to get guys to buy in, but that goes back to the point of building relationships, right? Like, being able to sit there and tell a kid, hey, I'm going to be honest with you up front in recruiting, right? Like, I'm going to have that conversation with you in recruiting. And number one, that tells me, goes back to our conversation, what you said about being coachable. Like, hey, if I see a frown on your face when I bring up blocking, it's probably not going to be a good marriage, man. We're probably not going to be able to bring you in. So, because you're not going to be bought into what we got to do, despite how great your athletic ability is, being able to catch the ball and run, or being able to run the ball in between the tackles. Well, you guys know blocking and tackling is the fundamentals of football. So if you're not willing to do that, it ain't going to be we ain't going to really win a lot of games. So it kind of plays itself out in that aspect.
You know, as a running backs coach, I'm sure you understand the importance of, you know, offensive line and you know, the blocking schemes, et cetera. Like, what are some things you use to kind of, I guess, you know, get for your running back room to have a good relationship and a good understanding with that offensive line room, so that kind of everybody's on the same page?
I believe football is like language, right? And so in order for me to be successful and communicate with you, we all got to be speaking English to understand, right? So I tell my backs, as soon as they get in day one, we speak the same language as the offensive line. We spend time going through each and every combo. We know what the difference is between zone and gap combos, right? We spend time, we know where our points are at. We know all of those things, right? And obviously, I'm not going to dive too far deep in the talking ball, but I'm going to sit there and tell you that, you know, I quiz my guys. I sit up there and tell them, hey, man, how are we blocking power up against this front? How are we doing these things, right? And I believe in the three learning styles of football, right? And just learning in general, right? And that's audio, visual, and the actual practical doing things on the field, right? And so, you know, rather it's walkthroughs with the O-line, you know, we watch videos and cut-ups of us being able to, you know, obviously an inside run and our different run techniques, but sitting in the classroom, you know, and having that teaching background that I do have is I get them to call out and say, hey, what is the guard tackle doing here? Okay. Where is he pointing at? Okay. What's your track? What are these things that you're going? What, you know what I'm saying? Where are your eyes supposed to be at? Okay. What is he supposed to look for, you know, when it comes to running this specific run scheme, right? And so I do that because at the end of the day, right, in my opinion, the great running backs that I have, they've always had a appreciation for the offensive line. I tell them all the time, like, if you don't trust the five up front and the five don't believe in you, then the run game is never going to work, right? And so, and it's truly a marriage. It's truly, you know, we've got to be on the same page and willing to, you know, make sacrifices and you know, see what they see so that we understand. Because, I mean, I've never been 300 pounds. I've never, you know, hopefully never ever get to that point. But I've never had that, never done that, and had to put my body in block another 300 pound man, but it ain't easy, right? And so, and it's not easy, and it definitely hurts, right? And so, again, nothing is worse than an offensive lineman creating a hole in the back, just missing the hole because we're not on the same page. And it literally that irks me as a coach, and I feel bad because I gotta sometimes look over at the offensive line coach and I'll be like, man, I don't know what he's saying because I don't. So that's how it is. It's football.
All right. So you talked about all of these guys were the man at some point.
Yeah.
Obviously, when you got a freshman come in, they're going to have that ego that comes with that, right?
Yeah.
How do you manage that ego without crushing the spirit?
I mean, I think it's transparent conversations, Mike. You know, I tell them all the time, you know, I love the confidence, but I also, you know, I had a coach tell me this, and I've kept it everywhere I've gone, right? There was one time we were sitting in a meeting, and he gave me a cup, right? And I start my meetings with this every single year, right? And I put the cup on the table, right? And you know, one cup is a small cup, the other cup is a bigger cup, and then I have a gallon on the table, right? And so I pour water all the way up to the brim, right? And I pour water all the way up to the brim of the second cup, and then I pour water in the gallon, right? And I ask them, and I say all the time, I'm like, which cup would you rather be? And you know, you get some that point at, you know, the small cup that's all the way up there, like, oh, I got a full glass of water. You know, hey, some point at the second cup, which is like halfway full, right? And then I get the other one that has a gallon, and it's like, it could be like maybe a quarter, you know, maybe an eighth, I don't know. Like, it could be super small, the amount of water that's in there, right? And I asked them, I was like, which one do you want to be? And I tell them, I said, man, you should want to be the gallon. And what I mean by that is, man, like, at the end of the day, just like my coach told me, in life, your cup can never be full, right? Because you're not growing, right, as a man. And so, like, I look at that and I use that as an example all the time. And I tell my guys that because I want guys who, you know, have a, in my opinion, a gallon mentality. They're always searching and needing, you know, for knowledge and being able to understand and say, hey, I want to get a better understanding. I want to continuously be able to grow, and I want to be poured into, right? And so I use that as an example in my room all the time, right? And that kind of debunks a little bit of that ego, because it's like they start to watch film and they start to see, they're like, oh, like, hey, I can't bounce this run outside because of this front. I can't understand, you know, I can't take this ball back door because, hey, this linebacker's sitting in this gap, right? And, hey, pre-snap stuff that I could be seeing before that. Hey, I could have had my eyes in the right place on this blitz because at the end of the day, it was indicator because of the safety, right? And so you kind of get them to understand, hey, what you think you know about football, yeah, you have a general relative understanding. But this game is so beautiful that, like, you're continuously learning and evolving each and every year, and you can never be full, right? And so that's how I get across to my guys, right? That kind of confidence, but not walking with that cocky, arrogant attitude of, my cup is always full. I can never, ever be poured into or grow with knowledge, right? And so that's kind of how I debunk that a little bit. And, you know, other times, you know, I'll be honest, they, you know, some guys, you know, they get it. Some guys, they got to get up at 5 a.m. and they got to be reminded, you know what I'm saying? So I might have to be reminded, you know, hey, like, what a workout, you know what I'm saying? So it's how you choose to accept, you know, coaching, if that makes sense.
Last question for me, Coach, is something that I've always wondered about running backs, and that's vision. Like, how much realistically can you improve someone's vision? I think, you know, I don't want to name the player, but there was a guy that was like, he was an athletic freak. He was on a FBS national championship team, but it always seemed like he was either busting a 20-yard run or he was like running square into the pile. Like, how much is it realistic, you know, to be able to improve a vision of a running back, and how do you go about doing that?
I mean, I think for me personally, I believe every run has a read. Your eyes are supposed to be set in a certain place as back. I also think too, when you understand blocking schemes and how plays are developed, your patience, right, becomes slower, right? A lot of times you see the transition from high school backs to college backs, and where they struggle is they think that they don't have a good sense of tempo on each run, and they don't understand the patience that needs to happen in order for the play to develop, right? And so as a teacher, you know, for me, I sit there and I have to dissect the entire play to get them to understand you need to set your blocks up, and right, and like I like to use, you know, certain terms are very simple. I tell them all the time, the offensive line clears out so we can go cash in. Well, I mean, if it's still cluttered, they haven't cleared it out, right? You can't go cash in, right? And so that kind of helps them understand the different patience on runs, whether it's zone, whether it be gap. But, you know, I also break down most 100-yard games, right? I look at it from an analytical standpoint, right? And so What I mean by that is when you look at a run, even in the NFL, right? Most times, you know, if you bust off a 70-yard run, yeah, you can get over 100 yards. Yeah, you can get pretty high. But a lot of times when you see guys having really great games as running backs, they're taking what the defense gives them. That's 4, 5, 8, 7, 10 yards a pop. And that they're continuing to keep churning their feet. And they're saying, hey, I'm setting this ball where it needs to go. And eventually, after we continuously, you know what I'm saying, run the football and attack and keep attacking and keep attacking, eventually it's going to break, right? And we're going to test the defense's will. And so, you know, for me, I kind of break down that and I go through games and I look at it and I'm like, hey, like, let's see this. Well, he only had a 25-yard game, coach, but he rushed for 175 yards. Well, yeah, he was patient. He was efficient. You know what I'm saying? He took what they saw and it accumulation over time and it wore the defense down. And eventually it broke open, right? And there was an opportunity for him to go score and make a big play that changed the trajectory of the ball game. And so that's kind of how I do it. You know, obviously it's a little bit more in depth when it comes to talking ball and run reads and stuff, but that's kind of the summarized version of it, guys.
All right, Coach Lane, I'm going to stop with this. First, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We're really proud of what you've done in your career, and we are going to be continuing to root for you as you move forward as a coach. I know personally I'm going to be rooting for Presbyterian this year because of that Old Dominion connection we now have. Do you have a message for Monarch Nation or maybe people that might want to be coaches one day?
Yeah, I mean, for Monarch Nation, I would say continue to support all Monarch Athletics. You know, I think we have a beautiful school, you know, led by our president, you know, and specifically speaking to the football team, you know, as an alum, I'm super proud of Coach Ryan. I had an opportunity to meet him one time, very close with Coach Lucas, the running back coach on staff there. You know, those guys have worked tremendously as a staff to build this program up and take it to the heights that it's at now. But, you know, I would say continuing just to put your arms around them, uplift the players, continuing to be able to make it two games and sit and watch games and support, because, you know, I think Norfolk Virginia, as we all know, the three of us on this podcast can sit there and say, it's a beautiful town. We got a football town, you know, 757 is ran by football. I don't care what anybody say, you know, it's ran by football and ODU needs to be supported. And so for me, you know, I was proud of those guys this past year and what they were able to accomplish. And I know that they're going to continue to do it this year and achieve at a high level because, you know, it's greatness in that building and it starts at the top. So, you know, super proud and happy and I'll be rooting for them in Clinton, South Carolina as well. And yeah, and anybody that wants to be a coach, again, coaching is about teaching, you know, it's about teaching on and off the field and uplifting people and giving back and pouring into, you know, people the way people might have done that for you, excuse me. And so if you, God give me that vision and you truly want to go after it, man, and be relentless and don't stop. And I would tell people all the time, you know, your dream can become a reality. Just it's about the work you put in and the faith you have. And so I think anything is possible when you marry those two things together. So.
Well, thank you again for joining us. Thank you, Justice, for filling in for Aaron. Go Monarchs and go Blue Hose.
I appreciate it. Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.